You're listening to Carnegie Tsinghua's China in the World podcast, conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center for Global Policy, located in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host. Today, we're delighted to be speaking with Dr. Evan Medeiros, who, until this past summer, served nearly 6 years in the White House National Security Council, advising President Obama on China and Asia. Evan joined the National Security Council in the summer of 2009 as the NSC China Director, and then from July 2013 to June 2015, served as the Senior Director and Special Assistant to the President for Asian Affairs. Evan, thank you very much for being with us this week in Beijing on the Carnegie Tsinghua Distinguished Speaker Program, and thanks for being on this podcast today.
Great. Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here in Beijing this week. It's been a lovely week. We've had blue skies a few days, and this is the first major activity I've done since I left the White House. So thanks for arranging this, and we've had some fascinating discussions in Beijing this week.
Well, we've had some great discussions this week, and we'd like to cover some of the topics that you covered while you were here in Beijing for our listeners. I want to start out by going back, when you started at your time at the National Security Council in 2009, the United States and the international community were in the midst of a global recession. We were witnessing shifts in the global distribution of power. President Obama was shaping a new approach to U.S. foreign policy and the U.S. role in the world. And I want to ask you first, how did Asia fit into the president's foreign policy vision, and in what ways did that impact the strategy which you helped to develop on the Asia-Pacific and our policies with China?
Well, Paul, that's a great question, and it's a good place to start for any discussion about U.S.-China relations, because it begins with Obama's view about the U.S. role in the world, and specifically the U.S. role in Asia. In 2009, as you said, there was a broad recognition from the president on down that international affairs was changing. It was becoming more multipolar. There was a greater distribution of power. The global financial crisis clearly was having an effect on relations among countries throughout the world. And what we found when the president came into office is that we were underinvested in some areas and overinvested in other areas, given these big changes in the international system. And one of those areas where the U.S. was underinvested was the Asia-Pacific. And so we made a very significant effort in the first year to try and rebalance, or to begin rebalancing, U.S. foreign policy based on this recognition that U.S. economic and security interests were increasingly at stake in the Asia-Pacific. So we began building a strategy that involved the U.S. being more active in both Northeast Asia and Southeast Asia, active on diplomatic issues, economic issues, and military issues.
And as part of that rebalancing to Asia, can you describe a little bit the China component? How did the China component fit into that overall rebalancing strategy?
China was an integral component of the rebalancing strategy. The Asia rebalancing strategy is defined by five pillars. One of them is engaging emerging powers, and China obviously is one of the most prominent emerging powers in the world. And the essence of the strategy was to encourage these emerging powers, and specifically China, to play a greater role in addressing the numerous economic and security challenges that the international community faced in the Asia-Pacific, like North Korea, and globally, like global economic growth and climate change.
If we look today at the U.S.-China relationship, we're in a complicated moment. There are frictions in the South China Sea. There are frictions on the cyber issue. There are areas of cooperation that are not, I would argue, not achieving their potential. Some scholars have recently called for a revision of our China policy, said that relations are at a tipping point. Do you agree with these assessments? And how would you view the long-term health of the U.S.-China relationship and our ability to manage both the enhancement of cooperation, but also and perhaps more importantly, managing the friction in the relationship?
It's a great question, and it's something that I spent a lot of time thinking about during my time at the NSC and during our meetings here in Beijing this week. I don't believe that we're at a tipping point. I think that you rightly pointed out we're in a complex period in the U.S.-China relationship. But in my experience, we're always facing a complex time in the U.S.-China relationship simply because this is a relationship defined by both cooperation and competition, and both elements are intensifying in recent years. So the important goal in China policy is to manage that cooperation and competition to ensure greater levels of cooperation, to elicit that from China, to encourage that using both incentives and disincentives, while at the same time bounding the disagreements, bounding the competition, so that doesn't become the defining elements of the relationship. And I think that is the core policy challenge, because I think there is wide agreement among specialists in the United States that we want to avoid inevitable rivalry between the United States and China. A final factor to keep in mind in assessing the future of the relationship is that this is a highly resilient relationship. We're in year 7 of the Obama administration, not year 1. The channels of communication across the relationship are broader and deeper than they've ever been before. We know the Chinese and they know us. We also have built up a very solid track record. The U.S. and China over the last 7 years have worked through some difficult issues. We have resolved crises, and we have a good track record of working together to solve important problems. North Korea's nuclear program, Iran's nuclear program, climate change, etc. So I think that fundamentally this relationship over the next 18 months under the Obama administration will continue to be a constructive one.
Given where we are today, what needs to be improved? What are the areas that can be improved in the relationship, and what are you worried about in the relationship going forward?
Well, the principal issue that I'm worried about is China getting drawn into the U.S. election cycle, because that's never a source of stability in the relationship, because it results in debates in the United States that can often demonize China in ways that negatively affect the U.S.-China relationship during the election and potentially constrain candidates if and when they're elected. So that's not a helpful dynamic. I think the areas we need to work on are the areas of competition that you referred to earlier, Paul, in particular the issue of the South China Sea and cybersecurity. These are issues that not only affect American economic and security interests, they also touch on the fundamental question at the heart of the relationship, which is what kind of rising power is China going to be? Is China going to adhere to international norms that have been well accepted for decades, or is China going to seek to revise those rules in ways that support China's narrow interests? And so work on the South China Sea issue and the cyber issue is going to need to be done over the next 18 months so these don't become corrosive issues that undermine the overall stability of the relationship and put us on a path to inevitable rivalry.
You mentioned the state visit, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit. President Xi Jinping will visit the U.S. next week. His first stop will be in Seattle, and then he'll go on to Washington for a state dinner and a meeting with President Obama, and then on to New York for the U.N. General Assembly. Could you give our listeners a sense of what your expectations are for the visit? I know you were integral in the planning and the execution of last year's summit between President Obama and President Xi on the margins of APEC in Beijing, and by all accounts, that was deemed a very successful summit. What are your expectations for next week, and what are the most important objectives for the visit, and what are the things that our listeners should watch for?
Well, having been through three of these big summits between President Obama and his Chinese counterpart, I have modest expectations. I think, first and foremost, the most important element of any of these visits is ensuring that there's plenty of time for both leaders to have extended discussion about the major strategic priorities in the U.S.-China relationship. It's difficult to overstate the importance of that sort of interaction between the President of the United States and the President of China to really work through the complexity of the relationship in order to expand cooperation and manage competition. I would encourage your listeners to do an assessment of the deliverables. That's always important, and in particular, it's important to demonstrate that the U.S.-China relationship is delivering for the American people and that it's serving American economic and security interests. But that should not be the only metric by which the state visit is judged as a success or a failure. I would encourage your listeners to pay attention to what President Obama and President Xi say at their press conference on the morning of the 25th. That is very high-level strategic signaling on both parts, and hopefully both of them will have significant messages about taking the relationship to the next level.
Well, thank you. And I want to come back to an early part of your career when you were at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace as a junior fellow in 1993. And you spent the next decade working as a scholar. And you've spent the last 6 years working as a policymaker, a policy practitioner. And so I wanted to ask you, what kind of things do you think, given your 6 years of experience, think tanks should be thinking about in terms of how best to assist policymakers in understanding the challenges that exist, but most importantly, I think, in terms of finding solutions, constructive solutions to a lot of these problems?
It's a great question, Paul, and it's something that I've thought a lot about as somebody that has lived in both of these communities. But as you said, my career after college did begin at the Carnegie Endowment, and I am profoundly, profoundly grateful for the opportunity that I was given as a junior fellow in beginning in the summer of 1993. It was my first introduction to the world of policy research and policy making, and it really gave me my start. So I want to thank the Carnegie Endowment for giving me that chance. In terms of the role of think tanks, I think think tanks play a very important role in policy making. First and foremost, it's in think tanks that think tanks have the ability to conduct research on sort of the essential aspects of security challenges and economic challenges throughout the world. And their work helps policymakers better understand the nature of the challenges they're facing. Because oftentimes in government, you simply don't have time to pick apart the problems you're dealing with. And so good quality research based on real data is helpful in understanding the nature of the problem. And then offering policy-relevant recommendations is always welcome. And I think the Carnegie Endowment does an excellent job of not only analyzing problems, but also offering a range of options that are implementable. And I would encourage the Carnegie Endowment and any research institution to really focus on those two elements of their work.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you out this week in Beijing with us as part of the Carnegie Tsinghua Distinguished Speakers Program. And thanks again for doing this podcast with us.
Thanks.
That's it for this edition of Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.